Welcome to the Preaching and Leadership Podcast. This is the place where you will get practical, actionable help on how you can preach and lead better. Our ministry partner for this episode is Disciple Labs. Disciple Labs is a brand new tool that will help you measure what matters most. Most of us, we measure baptisms, giving, attendance, those kinds of things. But what if we could measure and help our people realize how they're really doing in their walk with God? Well, Disciple Labs is the answer. They just released a brand new feature that will allow you, if there's someone who maybe has a deficiency in prayer, you can set up customizable next steps to inform them automatically, hey, here's something you can do to improve your prayer life. It's a really great tool. Highly recommend you check it out and learn more. If you want to learn more, go to rookiepreacher.com/disciple labs. That's rookiepreacher.com/disciple labs. Well, hey guys, happy Tuesday to you, or you know, whatever day you're listening to this. Happy that day too, if it's not a Tuesday. But hey, I'm really excited to bring this interview to you. It's with Lane Sebring. Lane has become a friend of mine, and he is the executive pastor at One Life Church in Knoxville, Tennessee. He is the founder of PreachingDonkey.com, and he is the author of a great book on preaching that I highly recommend to all of you preachers out there called Preaching Killer Sermons. And today what we're going to be doing, we're diving into a transition that he recently made into the executive pastor role. We're going to talk about some preaching, but we're also going to be talking about the things that he has learned as he's navigated this transition to being an executive pastor at a growing multi-site church. And even if you're not in that context, in a multi-site context, or a, you know, your church is not, you wouldn't classify it as growing, this is going to be a helpful conversation because we're going to be talking about systems, and systems inside of the church are relevant and needed no matter what size, no matter what stage, no matter your context in the church, because the church needs some structure. And when the church is structured for growth, then it is poised and positioned for growth. And so I am excited for this conversation because we get to dive deep into not just preaching, but also systems and leadership. And if you are in the midst of going into a transition, or you're thinking about transitioning soon, some of the things that he shared when he was in the midst of transition and transitioning into One Life, you need to pay attention to that, because I think it's going to be really valuable for anyone transitioning into a new church and a new context, because what he did was very intentional, and I think it's going to be very helpful. So here's my conversation, my interview with Lane Sebring. Hey guys, welcome to the Preaching and Leadership Podcast. I am really excited to have Lane Sebring here. Lane, thanks for joining.
Oh, it's so great to be here, man. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So you founded PreachingDonkey.com. If any of you guys who are listening to this or watching this, you don't know about PreachingDonkey.com, or you do, Lane's the guy behind it. So how many years ago was that you started that?
It was almost exactly 4 years ago. It was July of 2014 when we started.
So, all right, 4 years ago, you decided to start a blog about preaching. What's the story? What's the story behind it?
Well, I had a passion about preaching and around preaching, mainly because of a couple of things. One was a lot of points in my life where God really spoke to me, moved me, called me to something, showed me something, was kind of directly tied to preaching. It was someone who spoke and it impacted me. It was someone who taught the Word of God in a way that came alive in my heart and in my life, in such a way that I was like, I've got to respond to this. So that was the first thing. The second thing was I went to college and I majored in my undergrad program in a state university on communication. So I learned kind of communication principles. How do we connect with people? How do we connect with human beings? How do we speak persuasively? All of those principles. Then I went to seminary and I learned how to bore everyone with the Bible. And I thought, gosh, there's got to be a better way to approach preaching than just a very technical, this is what you do, this is what you don't do, this is how you exegete the text, this is how you do a good hermeneutic, get up there, content is king, hope for the best. And I just thought, you know, I would see the result of that. And it looked nothing like the kind of preaching that really made an impact on me, where you had these guys who could get up and it was sound biblically. It was great exegesis. It was a good hermeneutic and it was compelling. And it reached out and grabbed me and it pulled me in. And I thought, gosh, what's the secret behind those two things? How do you get great communication and great exegesis and bring them together in a way that just is like powerful? And so I just started blogging about it and writing down things that I was learning and experimenting with. And that was 4 years ago. And it turned in from, you know, from a blog to a podcast to a book and now a YouTube channel and another book coming. And so, but it all started with that passion of, I want to help myself understand what makes preaching great from both of these different angles. And I also want to help as many preachers communicate better as I can.
That's cool. Yeah. I've really enjoyed all the content that you've created. What, as you've been going through this 4 years, that's a long time to be creating content and all that. What's been one of the things that you've, I guess, been most surprised about that you've learned over the years, as you've been creating content for Preaching Donkey and, you know, hearing pastors and all that stuff? What's been one of the most surprising things about it?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think for me, it's the amount of preachers who are hungry for great preaching tips and advice. When I first started, I thought, okay, everybody knows all this stuff and they're already bored with it, but I'm gonna share anyway, right? That, like, everybody's read Andy Stanley's book, everybody's watched Craig Rochelle preach, and everybody knows all these principles. So they're just gonna listen to this and they're gonna say, ho hum, that's all stuff we've always known. And what I found is that there's actually lots of preachers that every single week they look at this coming Sunday and they look at their notes and they look at the Bible and they look at and they're just wrecked with, gosh, I've got to make this come alive. And I just don't know where to go. Mm-hmm. And so what I have found is that, and I know you know this as well with everything you're doing at Rookie Preacher and everywhere else, preachers are desperate for leadership and preaching content. And there's never too much of it. And so that's been really helpful for me because it's a journey for me of learning and of developing. And every time I preach, every day, I learn something new that I didn't know before. And you don't ever exhaust knowledge and you never perfect this art. I mean, you can preach for 30 years and you still can improve. And that's so exciting to me because I can still improve and everybody else can still improve. And the things that I think everybody knows, not everybody knows. And that's exciting because that means that I have the opportunity to impact someone with information that can help them and can better their preaching. And that's so rewarding for me. I love it.
Yeah, I totally relate to that as far as just like almost you take for granted what you know, to the point where sometimes you second guess on whether or not that article needs to be written or, you know, that point needs to be brought up because you've talked about it on your blog, the curse of knowledge, right?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Like it is impossible for us to, the curse of knowledge is what happens when you know something and it becomes very difficult, if not impossible, for you to understand what it's like to not know that thing, even though you used to not know it. I mean, at one point you didn't know it, now you know it. And so when it comes to preaching, there are so many things that this goes into not just what we're talking about, where we're helping preachers communicate better. It's also in our preaching, right? Mm-hmm. Because sometimes in our preaching, there's so many things that we know that are so natural to us and so old hat and they've lost their luster and we're not wowed by them anymore. And we get up to preach about them and it's someone's first time hearing it. Mm-hmm. And it's someone didn't know. So if we gloss over and, oh, everybody knows this, or as you remember from Nehemiah, and people are going, wait a second, who's Nehemiah? What? Like new believers or unchristians are going, I feel left out. So yeah, the curse of knowledge is something that all of us have to overcome, whether we're helping people lead better, preach better, or we're preaching.
Yeah. I was the recipient of, like, even when I was in Bible college, you would assume in Bible college, you know, as an undergrad situation, Bible college degree, I go there and I'm a new Christian, like been in the faith for like a year. and felt like God was calling me to do vocational ministry. And so I'm in an Old Testament history class. And for the majority of the time I was at my home church, it was New Testament all the way for the most part, maybe some Psalms here and there. And so I'm hearing them talk about Old Testament history stuff, and I have no idea what they're talking about. No idea. And so it's even in that setting. So if there's a professor listening, like, it's so easy for us to assume that everyone else knows what we know. And yet we discount the body of work that took us, like, that we had to go through to actually get to that point of knowing what we know. And especially today, like, Bible literacy, it's way down. And so even saying, oh, you know about David and Goliath, well, people may have heard of that, but they only understand it from a sports reference.
Right. Yeah. The little guy overcoming the big guy. I think it, you're so right about biblical illiteracy. I think it goes all the way down to when you tell someone to turn to Matthew, I think it's important to give context, you know. Yeah. There's four guys, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. They hung out with Jesus, and they wrote some things down about what they saw Jesus do. And those books are the first books of the New Testament, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. We're going to look at the first one, Matthew, right? So in just a short, like, 15 seconds, I was able to give someone context for a newbie who, like, has no idea what's going on. So I think you got to be cognizant of that at every turn. And it's hard. It's one of the hardest things there is about preaching, because you've also got people in your audience who are annoyed by that unless you teach them to think that way. You've got to lead people to think on behalf of those who don't know what they know. And, you know, Paul said knowledge puffs up, right? But love builds up. You got to teach people to love more than they just want to know. You know, they know things and it makes them feel puffed up. And you've got to really try to correct that in yourself and in your people.
Yeah, that's a good point. What is this done, like, your work with Preaching Donkey, like, kind of almost dissecting preaching? What has that done for your own preaching?
Well, it's a lot. Every sermon is another opportunity to fail. It's another opportunity to blow it all up. Preaching is so vexing and it's so intense that, and I have so much respect for the art itself and for all that it represents, the fact that you stand in front of people and you speak on behalf of our creator, you're speaking on behalf of God, or at least claiming to. It's a big weight. It's a big responsibility. So if anything, it has been humbling just to see, like, how far I have to go to get where I really want to be and should be in my own preaching, and to realize that, yeah, I've blogged about preaching for 4 years, wrote a book on it, all that, but I've still, there are so many things that I'm constantly tweaking, so many things that I'm constantly learning and going, oh, wait, that's a better way to do that. I'm going to experiment with that. And then I look back at my old sermons that I preached when I was blogging about preaching, and I go, oh, I'm embarrassed by that now. Like, that's just, it's not good. I don't love it. And I'll probably look back at today's sermons a year from now and go, oh, I don't know. And so the point isn't to be, like, just self-critical and self-deprecating, but if it's taught me one thing, it's taught me that preaching is inexhaustible. You never master it, but that's also the joy of it, because there's always another thing to get better at. There's always a better way to communicate. People are changing. Okay, people are not static. You're not static. So as a communicator, you've got to grow into your voice, and your voice changes as time goes on. So, and the culture changes. And so if I'm still preaching the same way 5 years from now that I am today, then I will have failed. I mean, because it's something that has to adapt. And so that's, you know, I've kind of learned all of that, but mainly just that I got a lot of work to do.
I want to dive into that. Just kind of peel back the surface a little bit. Where does this desire, has the desire to grow, like this insatiable desire to grow? I see that in you. And, you know, we've talked a good bit offline and all that. Where does that insatiable desire to grow just in life? And is it just only in preaching? Did it just kind of start there, or where did that come from?
That's hard to answer. I've always been a pretty driven person, and I've always wanted to understand something and see if I can do it too. So if I see somebody do something and see them be successful at it, I think, could I do that? And especially when it comes to preaching, leadership, entrepreneurship, business, platform building, whatever the case, I'm not going to try to be an engineer because I don't think that way. I'm not going to try to be a scientist because I don't think that way. I'm not a mathematician. I mean, there's just things that I kind of go, oh, that's for someone else. Sure. But when it comes to making an influence, having an impact in whatever case that may be, helping other people do something or doing something and being successful at it so I can show other people how to do that thing and be successful at it too, that's really fires me up. And I don't know why. I mean, it's there. I think part of it is because, you know, as I go from stage to stage to stage in life, I realize that life is, and this is so cliche, but life really is short. I mean, to think about when I was, I'm 33 right now. When I was 18, 33 was 100 years away. I mean, it was like 33, I might as well be 100, right? So 15 years ago, I mean, I would have thought, well, when I'm 33, I don't know what I'll be doing, but I'll be old and boring and whatever. Well, 15 years from now is 48, and that doesn't seem that far away. You know, 15 years from now, my kids will be graduating high school, and you know, but it truly does. I know it's going to go by like that. So I just kind of have this desire to make the best use of my time and figure out how can I make the biggest impact. And I don't want regrets. I don't want to look back 5 years from now and say, gosh, I should have written that second book. I should have written that third book. I should have done that course. I should have started that YouTube channel. I should have. And look back at a whole bunch of things I didn't do. I'd rather look back at things that I tried and failed than things that I'd never tried in the first place.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally connect with that for sure. So a little over a year ago, you transitioned to a new church, a new role in a completely different city, right?
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. So what's the church like and what are you doing there? What's that transition been like?
Yeah. So, excuse me, I moved from the DC area. I was there for about 10 years working at a church in a lot of different roles, but the last 3 years I was the associate pastor, and, the pastor there was retiring, and I was really, kind of going down this path of putting my name in the hat to be the lead pastor there. That's kind of was the desire of that existing pastor. And he knew he was leaving. And so he was kind of, wasn't his decision to make and it wasn't mine, but it was kind of leaning in that direction. And at the same time, I had a friend of mine who had planted a church here in Knoxville, almost, well, 8 years ago at the time, now 9 years ago. And he reached out to me and he said, "Hey man, I need an executive pastor. I think you'd be really good at it. I think your skills," because I have a huge passion around preaching, but my gifting and the way I'm wired is probably more towards the strategic leadership of the church. Like I want to see the whole thing move forward, and I want to see it move forward well and efficiently and quickly. And so a lot of the things that I was doing at the church when I was there in the DC area was helping a church that's really in transition. The church is being revitalized, and there's a lot of work that needs to be done there from a leadership perspective. And so I was all about, like, I think this is where God has me, but started talking to him about One Life. His name is Rodney. He's the lead pastor at the church I'm currently at. And just hearing about the vision and what they've done and how, you know, at the time in 8 years, they'd grown to 1,000 people and 2 locations and very just moving forward fast. And I thought it just kind of came together. And I just knew over the course of talking to them that this is what God has for us next. And this is where I think my biggest contribution can be for the next few years, to be in this environment as this church is growing rapidly. And so we, is kind of interesting, the day that lead pastor, Billy Ross, the day he stepped down back in spring of 2017, he says, "Hey, I'm going to retire. I'm not going to leave right away, but I'm about to retire. And some of you may be wondering where Lane fits into this." Mm-hmm. So he's going to get up and share with you now. And I get up and I say, and there's probably a lot of people who thought I was going to get up and say, "So, you know, I hope that you guys like me because I'll be the next pastor, or I'm going to throw my name in the hat and see what you guys think," or whatever. And instead I get up and I say, "Hey, thanks for the memories. Appreciate the last 10 years, but peace out. I'm going to Knoxville. It was a little more meaningful than that, but I went, so I leave after 10 years and me and my wife and our two kids, and she's pregnant with our third, we moved 500 miles here to Knoxville. So that was kind of the story of how we got here. But this last year has been really amazing for me. I've grown a lot. The church and the time I've been here has grown numerically. It's grown from, we've grown from two campuses to now three. So I've been a part of a lot of things that I never was a part of before. Lease negotiations. We acquired a building and then sold it and then leased another one. And then, you know, had to outfit a whole campus. And then we had to move last minute to another campus. And there's been a lot of exciting things that have happened that I've been able to be right in the middle of that we never did at my last church. So it's exposed me to a whole nother way to lead, a whole nother ecosystem. And I've been learning a ton. I'm working for a absolute dynamite, dynamic leader who has a very crystal clear vision and moves very quickly. And I love it. And so, I've learned a ton from him on preaching because he's one of the best communicators I've ever been around. And I'm not just saying that because I work for him, because I appreciated his preaching for years and years before I ever came on staff. And just being here, being in a church that's so well led with such a strong vision and visionary leader, it's really exciting to be a part of. And so I preach, you know, 6, 7, 8 times a year. So not as much as I used to, and maybe not as much as I would like, but where I am right now is exactly where I need to be. And it actually frees up a lot of time because I'm not writing a sermon every week to do other things like write books on preaching. So, and also to do YouTube and things like that. So,
all right. Knoxville, Tennessee, much different than Washington, D.C., I would imagine.
Right.
One Life Church, three campuses. You said it was started 8 years ago and it's, what is it running as attendance now?
Yeah. So we're at about 1,000 people. Sometimes we bump up higher than that, but, and we're at, in September, it'll be nine years. So I think the first week of September is 9 years.
That's so cool. Yeah. The church I'm at, The Crossing, we started 6, 7 years ago and running about 800 at one campus. So it's cool to hear just, I don't know, it's kind of a similar, trajectory and time frame. What's it been like? What's been the biggest challenge? Because this is a different role, and obviously you just mentioned a bunch of different things that you guys have been dealing with over the course of a year. And I know it's exciting, but what's been the biggest challenge since you've faced this transition into an executive pastor role? What's been your biggest challenge?
I think that my experience is probably, from what I've read and studied about my particular role, my experience has probably been similar to a lot of executive pastors, where it's hard to know exactly what your contribution is as an executive pastor, because my role really is to be an extension of the lead pastor. So my role is to do what the lead pastor would do so that he can do what only he can do. And I really want to free him up to think big picture, to be able to focus on the vision, 30,000 foot view. Where is the church going? Why is it going there? What is God telling him? What is his vision? And then my job really is to come alongside and help carry that vision out, help make it a reality, so that he can focus on what only he can do. And I can focus on leading the staff and streamlining the organization, building out systems, keeping things efficient and proficient. And so the biggest challenge for me has been, what is my biggest contribution today? What is my biggest contribution this week? What is my biggest contribution this month, this quarter? And is what I'm doing the thing that I should be? It's every leader has this issue, right? What should I do and what should I give away? Who should I be building up so that I'm not doing this anymore, but someone else is doing it, so it's still getting done and I can focus on something else? So those are the tensions that I've had, because I work for a person who's a very strong leader and very competent. And sometimes it's hard to know what is the best thing to take so that he can focus on what he's doing. And sometimes those lines are just hard. They're hard to define. And I don't know that it's easy in any organization, especially churches that are growing and growing fast, because there's so many things happening all at once and it's constantly changing. And it feels very much like a startup in a sense that, it grows fast and it moves fast and you just got to keep up. And so, you know, knowing, and my thing is, I want to put my head on my pillow every night knowing that I I gave my best and I'm giving my best contribution and we're moving the ball down the field. And so when I can't do that, it's very frustrating. And so I just try to focus on, okay, where do I need to shift? What do I need to do? What questions do I need to ask? What things do I need to move around? And so that's kind of been my year, but, pressure makes diamonds. And so when you've got lots of pressure and you've got a big task, it can really set you up for success. So it's been a year where I've learned a lot, but it hasn't completely been easy. It's been something that has required the best of what I've got to give.
Did they have an executive pastor before you came on board, or is this their first experience with this role?
They did. They had a guy. He moved to Florida to take a position at a nonprofit, and so there was a little bit of a vacancy in that position for a few months before I came on.
Okay, because the reason I ask is I was kind of curious if this was a position and a role, you know, because obviously you mentioned this, you know, the executive pastor is an extension of the lead pastor, and a lot of times what you do is dependent on what they're good at and what they want to do, and how those gift mixes kind of mix together. So I was curious as to if you guys had to build this kind of role from the ground up, because I would imagine that the last year, even though you knew him, has been very much a, not just learning the organization as the church, but learning him as well. So you can know what you're doing.
Oh yeah. 100%. Right. Cause I've got to learn, if I'm going to be an extension of someone, I have to know, I got to know kind of their heartbeat and what's important to them and what they would do and what they would say in a lot of different kinds of situations. And so that takes time. You have to learn that. And there's 8 years of culture, very strong culture being built at that church that I was a spectator of because I was a fan of the church, but not a participant in. So for the last year, I've been a participant in that culture. And you also learn a whole lot about the culture because, you know, here I am being plopped into the number two position in the organization, if we're talking about the chart, right? Mm-hmm. And so I'm the second biggest champion of the culture, or at least I should be. And so I've got to learn it and champion it, right? I've got to learn it and lead it. I've got to learn it and protect it. I've got to learn the culture and promote the culture. It's got to happen all at the same time, and it's got to happen right now. So that requires a lot of paying attention. I actually interviewed each person on staff when I got there. So I spent the first month where I went around to every single person, and I had a Google spreadsheet, and I had questions I was asking, and I just sat down for about 2 hours with each person, and I said, "Hey, tell me about this. Tell me about this. Tell me the situation when." And it probably, to them, may have felt like they were being interviewed, you know, by the Bobs or whatever, but they really weren't. It was more just because I wanted to have as much organizational knowledge as I possibly could, as fast as I could. And so, you know, did that. And then the other thing that I'm doing right now, which I think I'm very excited about this project, because I'm developing a 12-month onboarding system for new employees, because we've hired a lot of staff just in the time I've been there. We hired 4 or 5 staff members in the time in this year, and we're only a staff of about 15. So we're a pretty lean staff really for the campuses we have and the size church we are. But, and not everybody's full time. Some of these are very part-time positions, but, when we bring people on, especially from the outside, I was an outside hire. We have a few other outside hires. I want a very systematized way to onboard for culture. And so I'm working on that, because, and once we get through with that plan, I'm going to actually take the whole staff through it. So we're going to, it's going to include videos. It's going to include books. It's going to include just kind of situations and scenarios to help people understand, here's what we always do. Here's what we don't do. Here's when we say things like it's got to meet the baseline of excellence. Here's how that's defined. When we talk about our values of being fiercely intentional and laser focused, here's what we mean by that. When we talk about keeping it real, here's what we mean by that. And here's how that works into actual practice. Here's what, you know, because I think a lot of times values can just be a word or a phrase until they're lived out. And so I want to show people, this is what we mean when we say this. And a lot of that comes from just my experience and also other outside hires that maybe didn't get parts of the culture right away and suffered because of it, because they were left behind, or they realized without knowing it, oh my gosh, I violated the culture in some way. And I shouldn't have done that, or that wasn't up to the standard. And so I want to do the best I can as the executive pastor to say, I want everybody who comes on staff to know right away who we are, what our heartbeat is, what it means to be on staff here, what our expectations are. Because here's the thing, we talk about all that in the interview process, but it's forgotten. I mean, it's forgotten almost immediately. So I want to circle back to it and circle back to it and review it and go back and read books about it and look at it from as many different angles as possible for a year. And I think by the end of that year, you've got a person who's in the culture and understands it. At least that's my goal.
There's so much there that I want to dive into. The first thing that stuck out was the fact that you intentionally sat down with every staff member and you had those questions. Because I can just imagine, you know, you're going into an executive pastor role, but that doesn't mean that someone going into a lead role or at a church that has staff can't do that very same thing. In fact, I would think that that would be a good wise thing to do as you're jumping in. What was your best question on that spreadsheet to just put you on the spot? What was your either favorite or the best question that gave you the most eye-opening information, if you don't mind sharing?
Yeah. What are your frustrations? I mean, because, you know, we started out with, okay, tell me what you do. And I kind of, okay, this is your title, but is that really what you do? And, you know, a lot of people in our organization wear several hats because we're centrally resourced. So centrally we provide plans, standards, systems, and resources. And then at the campus level, the campuses are responsible for execution and people, not executing people, but execution and people. Right? That's my one like pastor joke. I do that every time. Anyway,
I'm glad you clarified.
Yeah. But the point is, because of that, because we have central and campus, a lot of people wear a central role and a campus role. So titles don't really mean a whole lot. We're trying to correct that so that the title really describes what they're doing. But I started with, what do you do? And then I also wanted to know, you know, like, what is your actual title? And then what do you do? Walk me through a week, walk me through a month, walk me through your year. So we get through all that, and that's pretty easy for them to do. And then I'm like, okay, what has frustrated you this year? Like, give me a specific situation where you walked away going, you know. And what I found were patterns. I found that communication was an issue, like, and that's an issue on every staff, right? Yep. Where are the lines of communication from maybe the executive leadership team or the elders or the lead pastor or however you're structured, all the way down to anyone who's volunteering in an important role? How do things get, and then down to the congregation, right? So when decisions are made, how does everybody find out about that? And is anybody left out of that process? Because that can be very, very frustrating for people. Systems were something that came up a lot where, okay, there's no clear system for this, or if this person's missing from the equation, then we can't accomplish what we're trying to accomplish here. So communications and systems, and you start to hear the same thing kind of over and over, and you go, okay, we can fix this. Like, we can have communication channels and we can build systems. And so that was the most eye-opening thing for me, was just seeing that, all right, there's nothing new under the sun. The frustrations are pretty common and we can fix them.
That's great. So you've been working on a large, huge kind of project at One Life, right? Like, I think it's called One Life in a Box. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. So, and it's actually very related to what we were just talking about. So we got together as our ministry leadership team. That's the lead pastor, myself, and a couple of our campus pastors. And we started really looking at, let's put everything we do in a package that is accessible, that exists digitally or on paper. It's searchable by tags and categories. And it's all the way down to down to the minutia of what we do and how we do it and why we do it that way and what the win is. And so we developed something we call One Life in a Box. So the church is called One Life Church, and we developed something called One Life in a Box. And this is a set of systems, and it grows every day. By the end of this project, it'll probably be 1,000 documents, not even exaggerating, 1,000 documents that are in this that detail what we do and how we do it. And it's a living document because everything changes all the time. But there are certain things that are constant enough to systematize. So it's everything from, like take first impressions as a category. We have a first impressions category where we're really looking at the lobby. I've got a ice cream truck driving by right now. I don't know if you can hear that, but
you're thinking about running out there, aren't you?
Well, I'm sure my daughter's going to hear it. She's probably going to go run after it. So first impressions, right? That's going to include the lobby team, the auditorium team, the coffee bar team, the next steps team, something we call Vol Hub, which is a breakfast we make for our volunteers every Sunday morning. So it has all these touch points. Well, for each one of those, each person that's in any one of those needs to have a system. Like, this is what you do. This is when you arrive. This is how you do it. This is why. This is who you talk to. So for each one of those, we have the standard system. Then we have supporting documents. So there's going to be what we call our top five. In other words, if you don't do anything else today, these are the top five things you need to do. And most of those, by the way, are relational, because we're not just about, you're not just serving coffee, you're having spiritual conversations and making connections with people. Because our goal is to multiply, not to serve coffee. You just happen to be serving coffee, and while you're doing that, have conversations, right? Same thing with hosting, right? You're hosting someone to their seat, but that's not the point. The point is not seating people. The point is conversations. The point is connection. So there's a top five. There's a volunteer description. There is a checklist. There's a schedule. And there's a diagram. So we have a diagram, you know, for every, this is what it looks like. This is where you go. And so the goal here is that in every case, we have this for production. We have it for family ministry. We have it, like I said, for first impressions, for connections, which is what we call the team that really does our follow-up. So we have a connection card, like most churches, where you fill things out. And so we have a system for if somebody checks the box that says they've accepted Jesus, what do you do, right? We have a system for if somebody checks the box saying they want more information about baptism, okay? If somebody checks the box for what we, I mean, it is down to the absolute minute detail so that, and the reason why, it isn't because we just love details, it's because we want at every campus to have the same culture, the same experience, the same vibe, so that our mission doesn't suffer because our vision is the same and our culture is held intact and it's distraction free because the culture has been refined and will continue to be refined and we want it all to match. The other thing is we don't want anything to rely on a person. We want it to rely on a system. So the problem with not having systems is, well, okay, Gina is the coffee bar person, but Gina is not here today. So, well, dang, none of us know what to do. How do we brew coffee? Where is it? When do we start? I mean, oh gosh, okay, well, ask so-and-so, right? Well, so-and-so is busy with this other thing that doesn't have a system and the person's not here today. So it starts to become mission critical when, you know, we're talking about coffee, but broader than that, we're talking about the experience that people have when they come in and they're walking into that church with all kinds of things on their mind and weights and heaviness or just boredom or apathy, whatever the case. And we want to pierce into that. And we don't want to be messing around trying to figure out how to work a Keurig machine when we've got a person there with needs and concerns. And so all of it goes on paper, which means that basically if you can read, you can do it. So we can put this in front of you on one sheet and it's got everything you need. You flip it over, it's got how to do it. And then all the checklists and diagrams are posted. So our volunteers feel equipped. It also signals to our volunteers, you know, our parking lots. They've got diagrams. Here's where you stand. You know, if you have five volunteers, here's where they go. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And that's the order that they're supposed to go in. So if you're missing three, then you at least have positions 1 and 2. This is where the cones go. This is how the traffic pattern is. This is the top five. This is what's the most important. What that signals to our people is, you may be working in the parking lot, but what you're doing matters. It matters so much that we went to all this trouble to make sure that you know exactly what you're doing, why you're doing it, how to do it, so that you can focus on, guess what? Connecting with people, right? Having conversations, being that first touch, greeting people, smiling, so that they're open to hear what God has for them that day. And that's across the board, kids, everything else, and not just on Sunday, but every single thing we do. And so we are in the process of reviewing the first iteration of One Life in a Box. And we've done that and we realized a lot of things that were missing. So we're adding to it and we're just going to keep going. But our goal is to have it complete before we launch our third campus weekly, because right now our third campus is in the preview stage. Mm-hmm. And here in a couple of months, it will go to the absolute weekly stage. And we want to be able to put this in their hands and say, this is a brand new campus, but you've got everything you need right here to be able to lead this the way that you've seen the other campuses led.
That's great. I what I'm hearing is this idea of a system that is infused with vision. Because it's one thing to say, here's how you do something, but it's another thing to say, here's why we're doing this. And really, here's the ultimate goal. Here's why we even serve coffee, so that we can, you know, make people feel welcome, so that they can be in a position to meet Jesus throughout the day, right? So, and I'm so glad that you dove into the whole like person focus of a system, because somebody could say, oh, well, you're a multi-site church and, you know, I don't need to worry about that because we have one campus and we don't need to do that. Like I can just ignore that. But what you're saying is that this allows you to not be like a person dependent. I know that there are pastors out there, and you and I both have been in a situation where there is one person who loves doing what they do, and they love it so much that they don't ever teach anyone else how to do it. And then they get sick or they go on vacation, and then it's a scramble to make sure that thing is covered. And we just don't want that to happen. Why? Because, right, the mission and vision of the church and of what God wants to do is so important that we need to have these things in order. I love that, because it's vitally important.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, the thing is, think about being in a restaurant. Like if you worked in a restaurant and there were no systems for the employees, and they were always going to the manager asking him, oh, now how do we cook this dish again? And, you know, when we get a ticket, like which one do we prioritize? And what do we do about the drive-through? Well, all it takes is that manager having a customer complaint that he's dealing with, and now the whole thing's shut down, right? Like no efficient, profitable restaurant would operate that way. And my contention is the local church is so much more important than a restaurant, right? If McDonald's can have world-class systems, so should the church. Yeah. So we, and it's, and to your point about vision, it's like, you know, Andy Stanley says, you got to explain the why behind the what. He always really emphasizes the W-A, why. But you gotta tell people why, right? Simon Sinek, start with why. Mm-hmm. This is why you're doing it. The why is going to be powerful. It's got to be upfront so that they know, like, yeah, we'll get to what, but what's really secondary to the why. If you understand the why, then you'll fully embrace the what. It's kind of like when I, you know, I've been trying to lose weight. I've lost 20 pounds as of today, which I'm really excited about. When I read weight loss advice, thank you. When I read weight loss advice and they just say, oh, well, do this, you know, don't eat that, but eat this. I always think, well, if I don't know why, I'm not motivated to do it. Like if I'm going to do this, I have to know why. And I think people are no different. If people understand the why, then they'll rise to the occasion. They'll meet the expectation. They'll understand that it's bigger and that it's more important than just, I don't want to say more important, but it's bigger than just whatever the task is. Whatever the task is, it's bigger. The mission's bigger than that, but that's still vital to the mission. And I think it's important for people to understand.
Yeah, I want to dive into the systems a little bit, because I think sometimes a pastor can push back against a system because there's this tension between like calling the church an organization or calling it a church or an organism. And if we go the organism route, which I think that's valid, even our bodies, like God created us with systems, like the central nervous system. We have systems inside of our body that actually allow things to function. And sometimes when those systems get out of whack, it's not long before we're in the hospital. So in your experience and from your observation, what are some of the most important systems a church needs in order for it to be positioned to grow?
That's a good question. I think your first impressions have to be spot on. So, because, you know, you've heard this before, that, you know, the sermon starts in the parking lot, right? Mm-hmm. Well before they ever get to their seat and hear the sermon from the pulpit, it started in the parking lot. So the experience in the parking lot, the experience coming in the door, are people greeted? I can't tell you how many people the comment they have on a church is either someone talked to me and I was happy about it, or no one talked to me and we're never going back. And so here's the thing. People that want to get all spiritual and religious about it not being a system, okay, fine. My contention there would be, if you don't have a system and you just say, well, hey, we're a family and we're a church, and the church should be like a family. Well, what happens is your people are, not because they're bad, but because they haven't been led, are going to naturally gravitate to what? To each other. Like they're told, hey, you're a family, and they're going to talk to each other. They're going to stand in circles and visit with each other. And then newcomers are going to come and look in on that experience, realize they're not really a part of it, and they're going to go to the church that welcomes them. I'm just telling you, that's the way it is. Yep. So I don't have much patience for spiritualizing stuff that, in my opinion, is a misnomer, right? So this happens a lot in preaching, and I know you've gotten this at preaching, at Rookie Preacher. People will say stupid stuff like, I'm just doing hashtag real talk. I hope this is okay. People will say, well, like I'll post something about, you know, five ways to improve your preaching. And someone will say, read your, number one, read your Bible. Number two, pray. Number three, read your Bible. Number four, pray. Number five, pray. That's all you need. And it just with like such, you know, hashtag, all you need to do is read your Bible and pray. And they think they're so clever and like no one's ever thought about that. And they think it's really just going to like, finally, I'm going to realize, oh my gosh, I've been so off base here. What have I been doing, telling people to build tension and create interest and have a good opening and a good closing? I've needed to just tell them to pray and read their Bible. Wow. I'm so thankful that you told me that. When really what I want to say is, okay, that sounds really good and that sounds really spiritual, but you show me a pastor who's read their Bible and has prayed and has also worked on the communication aspect of things and is relentless about figuring out what it takes to connect with human hearts. And I'll put him any day over the guy who just reads the Bible and prays. Read your Bible and pray is an absolute minimum. I mean, if you're not doing that, if you're not reading your Bible and praying, don't preach, right? Don't preach, right? So, but read your Bible and pray, absolutely. And take it seriously enough to work on your skills as a communicator. And I think in the church world, yeah, be a family. Yeah, be the body of Christ. Be the church. And oh, by the way, have a big enough heart for the lost that you build a system that reaches them. I mean, think about this. When in the early church, they had a problem with the widows and the poor people and people who needed help. And they got in a fight. I mean, the church leaders got together and said, well, gosh, we can't be waiting tables. We're preaching the word. So what do? They built a system. Okay, they said, all right, well, let's get guys who can take care of this problem for us so we can do what we do, right? That's a system. Same thing with Moses. Everybody was going to Moses and they were saying, hey, Moses, can you help us with this problem? And Moses felt good about it. Hey, everybody comes to me because after all, I'm the guy that saw the burning bush and I'm the guy who God spoke to directly. Like everybody should come to me. And Jethro has this, you know, like his father-in-law says, hey, by the way, that's not good leadership, right? Build a system, have like delegate to other people. So this is all basic stuff. And yet I feel like it's so easy to just say, no, the church is the body of Christ. The church is a family. Therefore, it should look like this. And any attempt to systematize is met with this opposition of, oh, you're using business language. No, my contention is businesses are using church language. Businesses are using Bible practices, right? We're not stealing their best practices. They're looking at, even if they don't know it, they're looking at biblical principles and putting them into practice. They're leading like Jesus did. And all I'm saying is lead like Jesus did, build systems, right? Even when the boy with the loaves of bread and the fish came, if you read that story, Jesus like had the disciples put people in sections, right? So they've got all the food they need. It's a miracle. And yet they still put people in neat, orderly sections so they could serve all of them and know when they were all served. And everybody ate until they were satisfied. Somebody could have come along to Jesus and said, Jesus, now listen, you're Jesus. This seems too businessy. This seems a little bit too structured and organized. Shouldn't this be more organic? Because after all, you're God's son, you know. Anyway, you got me off on that, and I'm sorry.
I love it. No, it's good.
That's a point of passion for mine.
So we got the first one, first impressions.
Yeah.
So
that's it. Okay. Yeah, I think first impressions is huge. The other one, you know, kids ministry has got to be safe, relevant, and fun. If your kids ministry is not safe and you're not communicating that it is safe. I went to a church recently and that wasn't our church. I was speaking there that day and there didn't appear to be any security in the kids area. And I'm used to, we've got a great security team. And so it was just weird for me to put my 3-year-old girl basically in a room that was exposed to the lobby. She could run away if she wanted to. There was nothing blocking her. There was no one that appeared to be standing guard and watching. And in today's culture, I mean, you know, I'm sure that the church in Texas, the small church in Texas, never in their wildest dreams that they think some monster would come in and kill everybody, but it happened, right? So yeah. It's not just at small churches or large churches. Every church has to be cognizant of security, and parents more and more are aware that when they drop, I mean, I dropped my kid off at a church that I was also speaking at, and I go and sit down in the auditorium, and all I could think about was, I hope she's okay. I hope somebody's watching her. I know she has a tendency to just kind of do her own thing and run away, and there's no one there to catch her, you know? And so I think security is huge, especially in kids. The more you can communicate to families that you're on top of it, that there's two leaders in every room, that you've done background checks, that you have people, that there's security, there's visible security. So people know that not everybody can access the kids area and not everybody can just, nobody can take a kid and run if you don't have your sticker. Like, those are all systems and they're all important. And I think that's huge. So I would say, honestly, in this order, first impressions and then kids, those two things are more important than anything that happens in the auditorium for families, for singles or people without kids. You can skip that second step. And then I think, obviously, you've got to have good systems for your service and for the experience in there, because if you're missing and people don't know when to get on stage and it's awkward and, you know, it has a feel of they didn't think this through and this must not be that important. So some people have a fear of overproducing a service and, you know, I guess that could happen. But I think you want to make sure that you're not underproducing it. You're not giving it so little thought that, oh, I thought you were going to get up there. Well, I thought, well, okay, well, brother so-and-so, isn't that fun? It gives a signal, especially to newcomers, that these people really don't have their stuff together. And I could have done anything today, Sunday fun day. I could have been anywhere. And so I guess I'm just going to check out and get on my phone and see if there's anything better to do, because they didn't think this through. You don't want that. So I think that system is crucial to growth. So that's the order I'd put it in.
That's great. That's great. And, you know, I think what that's showing is that we need to be intentional in the church to do what the Bible even tells us to do, you know, develop systems, be intentional with the way we lead and the way we are welcoming people. Because you're right, first impressions, people can say, oh, we're a welcoming church. But the thing is, oftentimes we feel welcome because we're in the in crowd, and yet all the visitors are walking by us as we're talking to each other, and they're wondering if they even belong here. So that's huge. That's huge. So as you've been diving into executive pastoring, who have you learned the most as you've kind of settled into this role?
Who have I learned the most from?
Yeah.
I use a plethora of resources. I think what Rich Birch does over at Unseminary is pretty awesome. He's got some of the best content. He does a podcast called All About Multisite, and I think it's once a month on his Unseminary podcast. Lots of great nuggets there. He usually has executive pastors on that podcast, so listening to those guys and hearing what they've done has been really great. Also, Kerry Newhoff is, I don't know how much attention you pay to him, but he's, in my opinion, he's one of the best leaders out there in terms of being able to take his years of experience and distill it into just actionable things to think about, things to do, things to consider. And I think he's brilliant. And I think I've learned a ton from his content. So I think both of those together has been pretty amazing. And just honestly watching what's already established at my organization from Rodney and from the team and the culture and the vision and the work that's been done there, I've learned a ton from that as well. So I think putting all those together, I just try to soak it all up like a sponge and figure out, okay, how much more can I learn and what can I do and how can I contribute and how can I get better every day?
Yeah, that's good. So you stay pretty busy with all the things that you're creating. Obviously, you are a pastor. You've got preachingdonkey.com and all the things are connected with that. you've got a family. How do you make the time to create so much content? Because I'm imagining there's a pastor out there who maybe wants to start a blog, maybe wants to start a YouTube channel, or maybe wants to just in some way do a little bit more beyond the regular weekly stuff at church to either help people or, you know, help people in their walk with God or in the craft of preaching even, or something else. What are some of the things that have allowed you to be able to create so much?
Well, I think the first thing is you just have to want it. I mean, if you don't have not everybody has a desire to teach people outside of their church. Not everybody has a desire to lead leaders, and that's totally fine. So I would say number one, it's just got to be deep down. You have to want it. I think you can relate to that because you're a person who's very driven, has accomplished a lot, and does a lot. And I would imagine somewhere deep down inside of you, there's just a drive that you can't shake. You've got to do it, or you're just going to go insane. I'm the same way. I am very careful to work on One Life when I'm at One Life and do Preaching Donkey and everything else I do either before I go in or after at home. And so I'm very careful to keep those separate because Preaching Donkey is kind of its own entity, and it's kind of it's a hobby for me. It's also a passion, and it's important, but I don't want to be doing that at work. There's plenty right. to do at One Life. And so if you're going to keep it separate, not every pastor does, which is totally fine. Everybody has a different arrangement. That's just where I've landed. So I don't write books at work. I don't write blog posts at work. I don't do any of that stuff at work. So if I'm going to do it all at home, I got to get up early and I got to stay up late. And so, because I also have kids, I have a 4-year-old, a 2-year-old and a 1-year-old. And are soon to be 1-year-old. And they need my love and attention and all that. So I get home, we do dinner, put the kids to bed, and they go to bed about 7:30. And then most nights I work on writing, doing YouTube videos, doing blog posts, recording podcasts. My wife works on some things that she's doing. She also helps me with some of the admin stuff with Preaching Donkey. And we just limit how many nights a week we do Netflix. You know, we went from several nights a week and we knew that wasn't good. We're like, we're wasting our lives to one or two nights a week where in 7 days, we're going to spend one or two nights where we're just chilling and watching TV. And the other nights we're going to be productive and then we're going to get up early. So I get up before my kids, work on stuff. And so that's the way I do it. It does require a lot out of me, but it's, again, it's a drive that I have and I enjoy it. If I didn't enjoy it, I would just quit. I don't need it. It doesn't pay the bills, you know what I mean? But it's a passion that I have. And so that's what's kept me going. So what I would say for that person who wants to get involved, figure out what you're passionate about. Okay. So if you're going to start a blog, for example, if you're going to start, let's just say a blog, figure out what your niche is, who your target is. For me, it was pastors who preach and who want to communicate better. Okay. It wasn't every pastor because not every pastor preaches. It wasn't every pastor who preaches because not every pastor who preaches cares about how they communicate. So it's pastors who preach and who want to communicate better. So every time I sat down to write, I knew who I was talking to and I knew what I was trying to accomplish for them. And that was huge for me to have focus. When you have focus and clarity, I think it helps creativity because I used to have a blog that was just about everything in ministry, leadership, and life or some kind of, and I would sit down and go, okay, what do I write about now? My family or my next sermon or a leadership principle or, you know, counseling or pastoral care. I mean, it was too much for me. Some people can do that. I just could not. And what I found is if I focus on one thing, eventually I can broaden it out. So I did Preaching Donkey for 4 years and now I'm really interested in continuing to help preachers communicate better, but I also want to help pastors blog and start podcasts and start YouTube channels and write books and publish courses. And I haven't done that yet, but I'll do it and start teaching people how to do it like you've done. And the thing is like that's something that I can now do that's born out of a passion, right? So it started with a passion for preaching, gained some experience helping people do it. And now I can speak to that to help other people do it as well. Because a lot of pastors want to figure out how do I make a little bit of side money? And, you know, I want to empower preachers to make money on the side that isn't delivering pizzas. You know what I mean? Like, so they can spend more time with their family and they're not having to be out another night of the week doing something else. And so, you know, taking your sermons and making them books and selling it on Amazon, that's possible. And a lot of pastors don't realize that, you know, anyone these days can build a platform around an area of passion or expertise, build up an audience, and that can generate, you're creating value, you're helping people, you're bettering people's lives, and at the same time, slowly building over time is an income that you used to have to go work a side job. And now the way with the internet and the way things are, you don't have to do that anymore. And that's exciting to me. And so I try to focus on where are the areas that I'm putting a lot of time and effort in right now, but that can residually for years to come provide some extra income for my family. And I want to help pastors do that as well. And really anybody else who wants to listen in.
That's great. What's next with Preaching Donkey? What's coming up?
Well, I'm releasing a book this fall, and the title of the book, I'm so excited, is called Become a Preaching Ninja. And the subtitle is Sharpen Your Skills, Hone Your Craft, and Maximize Your Impact as a Preacher. And this book is going to be all about how do you, as a communicator, master the art of preaching. And that's, like I said, that's a continual thing. It lasts a lifetime. But how do you become a person like a ninja? Because what does a ninja do? A ninja is masterful at the art of at martial arts and at espionage and assassinations and all the things that ninjas did, right? But when we talk about a ninja, we're talking about someone who has put in the time and the effort and has really found their voice and maximized their impact, sharpened their skills, and honed their craft so that they can have an even bigger impact. And so the book is all about how do you do that? Where Preaching Killer Sermons focused a lot on the creation of the sermon itself. How do you build tension and create interest? Mm-hmm. And how do you map out a sermon so that you as a communicator really reach out and grab people and bring them in? And that book's really foundational to the way that that I view communication and how to preach. And then Become a Preaching Ninja is taking it to the next level and saying, okay, how do I maximize myself so that when I deliver the sermon, it all comes together in a beautiful package. And so I'm really excited about it. I've got some chapters in there on storytelling, which I'm really, really pumped about that because I didn't really deal with that in my first book. Mm. A lot in there on humor, a couple chapters on how to use humor. I think storytelling and humor, if you can master those two things as a communicator, you can break a lot of rules. I mean, communication rules, you know, and standards. If you can really grip people with a story and you can make them laugh, you've got their attention, you can impact them. And I'm so excited to share with pastors how to do that and how to do it well. So that's coming up and it's being edited right now. It's with my editor. So I've written it and it's going to release in the fall.
I'm excited for it. I'm excited to become a preaching ninja because I really want to be a ninja. I want to get like,
hey, who doesn't? I mean, ninja. Everybody wants to be a ninja.
I mean, who wouldn't want to be a ninja, right? So Lane, this has been so good. We've covered a lot of ground. I know for those who are listening to this, they've got a lot of things they could go and implement and dive into. But I know that there's going to be a lot of people who are going to want to connect with you further and just follow what you're doing with Preaching Donkey and all the things that are connected with that. So what are the best ways that they can do that, keep up with you?
Yeah, so preachingdonkey.com, that's where everything kind of is. You can also find us on Twitter at Preaching Donkey. Facebook, facebook.com/preachingdonkey. You can also email me at lane@preachingdonkey.com. So lane@preachingdonkey.com. Really any one of those channels, you can get a hold of our stuff and you can contact me. And the podcast, the Preaching Donkey podcast, is in iTunes. You can search for it there. And we're also on YouTube. Just go to YouTube, put in Preaching Donkey, and you'll find our videos there. So really, we're kind of not everywhere, but as many places as you know, we want to be. So so you can find us in a lot of places.
Lane, this has been so good, man. Thanks for doing this and thanks for sharing all your insight and your journey as being an executive pastor and blogger and just all the things. Thanks, man.
Yeah, you bet, man. I appreciate you having me on here. I love your podcast. I listen to it every time. And I think what you're doing is awesome. And I love this new venue that you're doing it in. So,
well, I'm sure you have a lot of things that you could go and dive into and implement in your church or maybe even fine tune. And so I hope that was helpful. And I believe it was. I had a lot of fun doing it. If you enjoyed this podcast, if you would, go ahead and go to iTunes and leave a rating and a review. and subscribe. That helps get this podcast in front of more pastors so that we can all together preach and lead better. If you would like some free resources to help you preach and lead better, then go to rookiepreacher.com and click download, and we will send you all of those, our whole resource library, and you will be part of the community, and you'll be for the first to know whenever we create something new at rookiepreacher.com. Hope you guys have a great week. We'll talk to you soon. Peace.